Hello, Royals fans, and welcome once again to the podcast Inside Athletics. I'm Dave King, Director of Athletics here, and it's good to be with you again this week. Hopefully you are enjoying a week off or have had a very Merry Christmas with your family, and we hope that you do find some time for quality family time as well as some rest and relaxation, and that you also have been able to find the true meaning of the Christmas season when we can share with each other and give to each other in the same way that God has given to us in so many ways. I'd like to do a couple things with our podcast today. First of all, I'm going to give you a brief update from the ODAC Board of Directors meeting, which was held back in the first part of December. And then I have a special guest with me as well that will take care of talking a little bit about track and field. The ODAC Board of Directors meets twice a year, usually in December, and then for a more lengthy meeting of 3 or 4 days in either May or early June. Most of the time, it is reports from the different coaches' committees and different committees that exist. And then there are also some important topics that we'll pick up more as a discussion item before we move into any action. I'd like to highlight some of those. The awards committee was one that we heard from, and a couple of just things that come out of there that are increasing it. There is a balance between how much money we want to spend or how many times and in different ways we want to recognize our athletes and the cost of that. So, for example, we've had a philosophical discussion about honorable mention teams. Many times in the past, the honorable mention teams were made up of one player from every team who hadn't received some other kind of award. The other side of that coin is if you're going to be an honorable mention, you ought to really deserve it. So we've moved all sports to say that there are no more honorable mentions, but there will be a third team if you want it. And if it is a third team, it has to be legitimately earned and not just token so that every school is represented. So that creates a philosophical discussion. We've increased the awards that we give, and suddenly our budget is reflecting that. The other one that's starting to come up is assistant coaches. Nationwide, there is a move to start honoring an assistant coach of the year rather than just a coach of the year. Track and field is one of the ones that highlights that, largely because they have so many assistant coaches in a variety of the different sport areas. So that's one that we currently are dealing with. And it seems as if each sport is trying to increase the number of awards they give or the ways in which they award their athletes. And while that's a good thing, certainly to do that, where's the balance and the limit? So we spent quite a bit of time discussing that. Officiating committee is another one that brings up a lot of discussion, although it usually ends up simply saying, we don't have much choice. As long as the USA South and some of the other conferences are paying as much as they are, we're going to have to stay in tune. So it just doesn't work for us to say, okay, we're not going to give you raises next year. If we want the best, we're going to have to continue to pay for the best. So we just keep trying to negotiate it with the USA South and some of the other conferences around, and there really isn't a lot of choice in what we do. And so while that that frustrates everybody, I think it's just a matter of doing business. The cost of gas goes up and you got to pay for it. The cost of officials go up, you're going to have to pay for it as well. We also spent some time reflecting on our Student Athletic Advisory Committee, which spent some time with Special Olympians in the fall. We had a good meeting with that, good time of interaction there, and we will continue for another year with a Special Olympics emphasis out of Division III, and EMU will continue to be involved in a number of ways locally here. We helped in a soccer clinic already this last time. We sent a couple of representatives down to do bowling with Special Olympians, and we'll have them at one of our basketball games coming up as well. Following some of those reports were each of the different committee reports, sport committee reports. There's an athletic director that is a liaison to each coach's group, and they simply gave their reports. And I'm not going to highlight certainly all of them. There's a few things that come out. One of the things that is increasingly seen is how each sport sort of continues to rise to the level of what's expected and what has to be done. Men's and women's basketball were the first ones to get into a game film exchange program, and now everybody's starting to do that. So lacrosse is looking at it, volleyball is looking at it, field hockey is looking at it. And so, again, the cost to us is going to keep on increasing as it becomes more important for you to see the game of the opponent that you've just played. So most of the sports are now hooking into a system that allows only ODAC schools to, and you can just upload it onto the web and then it's available for everybody. But that's an increasing theme that goes on. One of the things that we are going to be doing is changing all of our coaches' meetings to preseason rather than postseason. And some of that is psychologically, I think all coaches are in better frame of mind when it's the start of the season rather than the end, and they may be able to look further ahead at how to do things. The other thing we are going to do is to bring in the officials at the preseason meetings. That way they can talk about the rules emphasis that are going to be there that they would talk about. I should mention, just for your interest, when going jumping back to the officiating, because it came out in a big way in the men's soccer, the most of these sports, we have an assigner. We actually hire an assigner from the ODAC. The ODAC hires an assigner who works for us. In the soccer situation, we don't do that. We work with another organization, outside organization, and that has continued to create some difficulties because they may not have the type. We can't put as much pressure on them for either assignments or improvements or evaluations and things like that. So that is one that is a little bit different, and we try to work with that. The one thing that we probably spent the majority of our time, or at least a major portion of our time, talking about has to do with eligibility requirements for student athletes. And it was something that I was thinking about making a major topic of my podcast today, but I'll refrain from that, but simply make one or two comments about it. And that has to do with the fact that it seems like almost every year there is a report coming out from some ODAC school or some sport about a student athlete who didn't qualify at a D1 school but now is playing at a D3 school. That seems to be the one that usually creates the most problem. And so there is discussion about whether or not there should be some standardization of eligibility within, particularly in the ODAC. Quite honestly, I don't think it's going to go anywhere because we're all enrollment-driven schools and we all have our own procedures and policies. So while we might say a 2.0 is required to get in, there might be factors related to the high school that came from. There might be the GPA. There might be the SAT scores. There might be the ACT scores. There might be a variety of factors that are used. And then there's probably also an appeal process in every school. And so part of it came out as anytime there is an athlete who's highlighted for their athletic ability and somehow it's found out that their academic ability isn't quite up to what some people think Division III would be. So, again, the stories and the rumors go out to say, hey, this person couldn't even qualify at the clearinghouse for Division I. How in the world can they play at Division III, which is supposed to be more academic-minded than Division I? The realities are probably somewhere in between there that not all the facts are there. But it does raise a valid point, and it's something that we want to continue to be concerned about, because we do want to have our students coming here for an education. The reality is that more and more the student athletes are certainly seeing the sport as their number one priority, and it's our job to try to shift to make sure that they also understand that the education is an important part. So I was interested in the discussion, and it's one that we'll pick up a little bit more because there are certainly perceptions that the academic community has in all of our campuses about what athletics should be about, and then there's perceptions and understandings and realities that we in the athletic realm work with. And it's a hand-in-hand process, but we also do need to understand that our ability to fill our rosters with all students who have 3.5 and above simply is unrealistic. So now the balance is, how do you continue to work with that? Some of the kids that we have worked with over the years in my 8 years here, while they may not have been quality academic students, and some of them may have survived academically and some not, we've also, quote, saved quite a few lives in terms of where they may have been, and we're able to give them an education. So, well, that we'll pick that one up at a later point. That's one of the topics that will continue to come up for discussions. We're trying to share more information among our schools, but it usually comes down to a difficulty of comparing apples to apples, and certainly the academic entrance limitations and standardizations is another one that's going to be that way. Well, my special guest today is Britton Olinger. Britton is the first full-time assistant coach in the track and field that we've had, at least during my time here. And so I'm going to ask him a few questions. Britton has done a great job. He worked a lot more as a volunteer, I believe, last year. And we set a goal in terms of how many cross-country and track and field athletes we'd have on the roster. And when the Jason Lukowitz, our head coach, reached a certain level, that warranted certainly with the number of students coming in and the amount of work that it would warrant an assistant coach. And so, Britton, welcome. It's good to have you with us here. Let me start first of all by giving us a quick summary of what does an assistant coach do, particularly in track and field? And I realize every head coach is going to tailor it differently. So maybe we just start by what are the kinds of things Jason has had you focus your attention on as an assistant coach?
Jason does a great job in kind of allowing me to run my own ship. My main focus is the sprinters, hurdlers, and jumpers. And during the cross-country season, I kind of help with the small details with him, driving vans or helping get hotel rooms set up. So it's kind of the grunt work during cross-country season. But when it comes time for track season, he does a great job in terms of letting me run my program and in terms of what I want to do. So for that aspect of it, I kind of become like just a normal head coach, except in terms of which is with my small little group I have right now.
So you're working with the sprinters, jumpers, and hurdlers.
Yes.
Throwers would go with somebody else.
Yes.
And so you'll plan the practices for them and sort of run with that.
Yep. I do the timing, when practice starts, the program, anything else. Mm-hmm.
Give us just a little bit about your background on your involvement with track and field at the high school and collegiate level.
First, right out of high school, I actually helped coaching my the high school which I graduated from. I did that for 2 years, and I went on to another college in which I ran for Jason Lukowitz for 2 years. And then Jason was going to offer me a part-time position with him to coach cross-country at UVA Wise. And then he left for which was another job. At that point, I kind of took over the cross-country team there for a year. At that point, I took a job at Abden and coached at Abden High School for 3 years. And that was a great experience for me. I think we were able to chance to pull that program around. They went from having 20 kids on the team to about 90 kids on the team within a year. So we were successful there. And Jason got a job up here and gave me an opportunity to come up here to coach collegiately.
And what was your specialty area? Was it distance or?
I've coached distance before, but my specialty is sprinters, hurdlers, and jumpers.
All right. And those you competed as a sprinter and a hurdler for Jason?
Yes, mainly sprinters, and I did cross country too.
Okay, good. Well, let's focus a little bit on one aspect of track and field, and you've sort of alluded to the fact that Jason allows you to do your own thing. We talk about this combination between individual and team. You've got people all over the place and practicing over here and there, and some are on the distance and some are out in the roads and then some are over here. How do you work at team at the same time of having this individualization? So it's not the soccer team. They all go out together on the same field. You're all going to spread out here. There's a lot of individualism. Are there any special techniques you've used in your coaching or you will now here at EMU the same way of sort of saying, how do we develop team out of all this individual stuff?
Jason's a great job in terms of letting us all come together for certain events at his house. And we kind of pack 50 people in one little spot. Kind of makes it especially interesting when it comes socially. But at the same time, though, it's a little bit different than basketball and football in terms of that aspect of it, because you go to a game and you're there for 2 hours. You go to a track meet, you're there for 8 hours. Or you're traveling for 3 or 4 hours on a bus. So you have to intertwine yourself with everyone else. So we kind of encourage people, the distance runners go into the throwing pit. They're cheering them on. And we have the throwers coming over to cheer people for the 2 mile on. So we got everybody going in a different direction and make sure we're cheering everybody on, that nobody's ever secluded from another group. So we try to make sure that everyone's especially at a small college, too, you kind of know everyone on the team. So we try to make sure everybody's always cheering for each other. And at the same time, it's the workout itself. It's kind of like your battle buddy every time. So everybody kind of has that respect for each other.
Sure. Well, one of the things that certainly we've not had a strong numbers in our track and field program, so we haven't had that team basis of doing that and to recognize the fact that these points might help in the meet, et cetera. I'd like to shift to the recruiting piece a little bit because I know that you're taking lead responsibility for the sprinters and hurdlers and some of the other field events as well, sort of taking over the track program as such. And I was sort of comparing this. I work a lot with coaches in the recruiting process just to sort of try to understand it. And certainly if you're recruiting a volleyball or soccer player, you want to go see them play because you want to see how they mix with the team and everything else like that. When it comes to track and field, they're either running a 10-9 or an 11-9. I mean, you can pretty well see it. Oh, yeah. You can read it on the internet, and you can know exactly what they're doing. Does that make it easier? What are you looking for when you are going after someone? Are you trying to see who had the potential, and how do you see that? That's a lot of questions. Do you like to go see them, or how do you start to go about this recruiting process from the talent end first? We'll talk about.
Number one thing is stopwatch never lies. So whatever you see on the stopwatch is probably what you're going to get. Another two thing you got to look at is what program are they coming from? Is it a good program? So they've been well coached for 3 or 4 years, or have they only ran for a year, or have they just been kind of half-hearted into it? So there's a lot of factors into it, because track's all based on training, or even just the development of the person itself. Is he 5'9", 120 pounds, and no medium arm at all? And someone who puts some muscle on him, he's just going to take off. So you look at multiple aspects of it. For me, it's to go from the stopwatch, and then that point, I kind of look at his history, and I kind of get to know the person, how long he's ran, what kind of training he does. And at that point, you kind of get a pretty good idea this guy's going to be someone under the radar who has a ton of potential, or he's just automatically a stud as he is.
Mm-hmm. So there might be some issues in which you're willing to look at someone who doesn't have the fastest time, like in second, third, fourth in a particular meet, depending upon the program.
The biggest thing is, for example, for that is someone who runs at 200 meters, and say his best time at a 200 is a 23.8. And he comes here, and we convince him to run the 400, which you move up an event. So someone that good foot speed can move up an event and just work on a little bit of endurance factor and type of threshold running. At that point, you're going to have a great 400-meter runner. So unlike basketball, you can't make a point guard to a post player, but you can make a short-distance runner to a little bit of a long-distance runner if they can buy into it.
Well, a combination of that might be in the soccer situation, because there are a lot of kids who play on the front line who end up playing defense back there. I would agree with your post player and point guard. That might be true, but there are sports who can do that. And that's an interesting aspect that, in fact, I've even heard Jason talk about some kids who are going to run become a decathlete. Rather than a particular focus in there. Well, you've been at it a short time. We haven't had a strong track and field program here. What are you finding in terms of trying to attract students to this campus, a Christian college campus, without the history of a strong track program? How are you finding that to be, and how are you going over that hurdle, if in fact it is a hurdle?
Sometimes it's not so much a hurdle in itself, because I think Virginia has a huge wealth of talent in terms of, so it's not really hard finding people who's interested in running track. And at that point, and what we do is getting recruits convinced that we have a vision here, and that we care about our program, and we care about them as an individual outside of track. And I think the biggest thing is recruits, as they get into it and they see that it's not so much for us about what we're going to put on the tracks, but what we're going to put out when they graduate. And so I think a lot of athletes, especially more now these days, looking for someone as a coach is going to invest in them, not so much as an athlete, as a person. And I'm doing that a lot more. And when I go to recruit or go to a track meet, I'm not so much going to recruit them, I'm going to support them. And I find that now it's becoming a lot more, better in terms of recruiting. Last year, that philosophy wasn't as big as it is now. And I think this year, the recruiting aspect of it, the numbers have really picked up a lot more, and a lot more interest in that program and the vision we put out in itself.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's no doubt about it. It's a growing sport, and Jason and you and Carissa and the others have done a great job in terms of increasing the roster. And, you know, we're looking for the 50 to 70, to 80 as well within the next couple of years. And that's only going to continue to help the whole, for sure. And again, my hat's off to you and Jason and Carissa for the variety of kids that you interact with and how you need to stay in touch with each of them. And it's just great to see them coming through the office now and sitting to talk to you, talk to Jason. And there is no doubt about it. The family feel, the care about them as an individual person. I think it has. I've always been a strong supporter of the track program in any school, because it just takes on a whole variety of people. Oh, yeah. And you can set individual goals, and what you do is not dependent upon someone else necessarily. Mm-hmm. As a team it is, but you can set those goals. At the same time, I've also worked with kids and tried to understand what it means to know that I will always come in third or fourth. Or, yeah. I may always come in third and fourth. So I said this before in cross country, if you're running behind Hannah Chapel Dick, you know, I don't know if you're going to get there. And if you know, I don't know that you're going to outjump Michael Allen in the long jump. So there can also be that piece, whereas in another sport, you may become part of the mix in a bigger way than that. So there are nuances there, and certainly we're going to keep talking about them here at EMU as a track and field program continues to grow. I want to say publicly a special thanks to you, Britton, for the work that you're doing with track and field, as well as Jason, and we are certainly looking forward to better things to come. Well, thanks for joining us this week. I hope that you've had a good time checking in with us on the track and field program, something that we will talk more about. The indoor track season will begin. They've already had one meet in December. They're going to be starting into full swing. And I think there's six or seven meets in the winter. I know that has grown.
Yeah, that's about six or seven. And we won't take everybody all the time. It's always we kind of pick and choose which meets or which go to.
And it almost seems like the indoor runs right into the outdoor. There is an ODAC indoor championship and then an outdoor championship. And we were going to get into discussing that. We'll have to leave that for another time. But to know that they are starting in action in January, so keep checking the webpage for that. As I mentioned to you last week, we are going to start an Athlete of the Week program here at EMU. And so no doubt some of these indoor track people will be featured on that. So that's a new feature you'll see on the rotating button on the lower right-hand corner, I believe, of our webpage, when we set that up in the second week of January. Thanks for joining us on the podcast this week. And once again, I wish you and your family a very happy new year. And I trust that you will continue to follow emuroyals.com for all the latest action. Send us all your ideas and notes and thoughts, and continue to support us in whatever way you can. Until we talk again next week, I invite you to make it a great week.